Hello, this is episode 19 of the Plan 8 Podcast, and I'm your host, Patrick Groenhaus. The Plan 8 Podcast is a technology, science, and internet culture podcast based out of Baltimore, Maryland. Today, we're doing The Week in Tech News, and my co-host today is a good friend of mine and partner in crime when it goes to drinking in Baltimore, Paul Capistani. How you doing, Paul?
Hey there, Pat. How you doing?
So, as you are new to the podcast, introduce yourself. What do you do, and what makes you prone to technology?
Well, day job is actually doing neuroscience research at the International Center for Spinal Cord Injury. And what makes me prone to technology is I've got my little web startup on the side called iPicky.com, basically trying to innovate on forums and discussion boards.
And how do you spell that for the domain name?
It's spelled IPIQI.com, but you can actually spell it however you want. We bought like 30 different domain names, so the master, all the misspellings.
The master of SEO you are.
Huh? Oh, yes, definitely.
So today, as I mentioned, is This Week in Tech News, the format in which we pick several stories that we enjoy reading and want to talk about for alternating weeks of the week for the Plan 8 Podcast. I will start today, as normal, with a story from TechCrunch about why Apple's new ban against sexy apps is scary. Apple recently started to ban all applications that had a mature theme to them, particularly ones that either user provided their own pictures and would allow wobbling effects or other adult-related applications. And why this is scary, as reported from one person, is from the TechCrunch article, as a quote, is, "Whenever we receive a customer complaints and objectionable content," this is from Apple, "we review the application. If we find apps that may contain inappropriate material, we remove them from the App Store and request the developer to make any necessary changes in their apps in order to distribute by Apple." But here's the funny thing. Apple has their mature application listing, which is for applications for anyone above 18.
Yeah.
WTF, Apple. WTF.
Yeah.
What's your view on this, Paul?
Well, I mean, Steve Jobs is sort of like the dictator here. A couple weeks ago, they were banning the word Android in apps. They have complete control over the App Store, and they will run it how they want to. I don't necessarily approve of the way they're running it, but
I mean, it's kind of interesting, because like, they've banned thesauruses and dictionaries because
those were mistakes.
But the thing is, though, the mistakes still happen, you know. It's like that whole thing about Nixon. It's like, mistakes happened. You know, people got hurt, but it wasn't our fault. You know, it's basically Steve pulling a Nixon, you know, or the people at Apple pulling a Nixon.
Yeah.
And
well, I'm sure a lot of this is Steve's, like, obsessive need to control everything and mm-hmm. to have a high quality of apps in the store and everything.
They did allow one application to stay in there, though. That's an adult-themed app.
Really? Which one?
Playboy.
It's allowed.
They have the Playboy application, which shows old archived issues of Playboy is still allowed on the App Store.
Nice.
All right, so we have a story from you. The next story is about what particularly?
Okay, so I also have a TechCrunch story as my first story, and it's about a Facebook acquisition which recently occurred. The company they acquired was called Octazen, and apparently it's a Malaysian company that specializes in scraping people's, like, content from emails to figure out who your contacts are. So, like, when you sign up for a new website and it says, hey, do you want us to see if your friends are on the site? The Octazen was the company that gets plugged in and figures out who your friends are, etc. Apparently, though, they may have been up to some shady stuff. They're known for, like, being the best scrapers in the world, using tons of different IP addresses to remain undetected, because maybe lots of sites don't want this happening.
Yeah, it's, the service basically is scraping the emails so it's able to say, oh, we suggest this friend or whatever.
Exactly. And Facebook made it seem like that's the only reason they're buying them.
But at the same time, this company has then access to all your private emails.
Yeah, and who knows how, like, legit they are in terms of caring about your privacy, right?
I mean, yeah, especially with the Facebook security issues as of late. I mean, if you're giving... It's different from looking at your contacts listing that's in, you know, Hotmail or Google.
Yeah.
But actually looking at the physical emails themselves, I mean, it's basically you're saying, hey, Facebook, what's up? I have a strange fetish I email people about from my personal email account. Yeah. Would you like to blackmail me for it?
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of feeling you get from this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And already, I mean, I've actually had experiences with Facebook where... No fetish stuff. They actually suggested friends for me, and it took me forever to figure out, like, it was some kid I knew in elementary school, and it took me forever to figure out how they knew, because I had never emailed this kid, and it turned out
I had... Classmates.com.
No. even crazier, I think. Since I have the Facebook app on my iPhone, I had the guy's, like, number... And they somehow, like, matched him up.
Oh, yeah, the Facebook applications in the contact list.
But, like, they actually looked at my iPhone's, like, contact list.
Yeah.
So I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's actually, what's pretty interesting you mentioned about the iPhone application is that, like, I have just an iPod Touch.
Uh-huh.
And I like it for its application features. Like, keep a Wi-Fi access spot with me going around to use my checking because I will not buy the iPhone yet. I made sure on the podcast to say before. But, like, it's like, may we have permission to look at all your contacts? And what's interesting is it puts their Facebook icon if it matches the phone number or email address.
I actually found that to be useful, you know, because I don't go through the trouble of putting people's pictures.
It puts their website, though, as
the
FB.
Facebook. Yeah.
But the thing is, no program knows what FB, you know, /:// is. I mean, like... Chrome don't know what it is, but I found that kind of funny.
Yeah.
All right, so to go away from that whole deal, the next story that I have is about personal computing, particularly that in a school district in Pennsylvania. As if everyone's probably heard this already, in Philadelphia they gave laptops to students to enable enriched curriculums for the school. Well, it turns out they got a slice of that internet pie they got. They also got a pie of privacy invasion.
Yeah.
Turns out the school has a record of administration staff being able to remotely spy on students while they're at home with those laptops. And the story out of the Washington Post is now from February 20th has officially said that the FBI is now probing this case, in particularly to the fact that it might have broken federal wiretap and computer intrusion laws, as well as the possibility, in other stories that were also posted about this, the possibility of misuse for child pornography-related things.
Yeah.
There was listings in other stories I don't exactly have with me, but I will have them in the show notes, about how some... They have pictures of students who are in their bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And all I gotta say is... Pedo Bear?
Yeah.
Who's on the other end.
Yeah. This is pretty crazy. The reason they had the software on there, apparently, was to find stolen laptops, right? Mm-hmm. And they apparently did find 28 out of 42 missing computers. My question is, first of all, how does that work? Because you're taking pictures of the inside of someone's home?
Well, it's like, you've probably heard the story before where people have that back to my Mac, you know, when they have a .Mac account and being able to find, like, a stolen iPhone or a...
Yeah, well, iPhones have GPS.
But the thing is, like, they also have back to my Mac on MacBooks. And you can remote connect into the MacBooks and be able to take pictures of with iChat without the person knowing.
But again, like, you're getting pictures of the inside of some kid's room.
You're getting incriminating photos of someone using the computer. Well as the fact the IP triangulation with the Skyhook that Apple included now allows you to be able to use that Wi-Fi as a, hey, IP here. Here is my address.
Gotcha.
And so, I mean, I can understand aspects of that, but the fact that students, this was done without students' consent, supposedly, the story goes into that the school did this without, like, the students even asking them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the laptops were stolen, there was no form of submission saying, yes, I agree this. They didn't tell students they were doing this to begin with. And it really, like, this is a terrible thing because it really sets back the idea of laptops for students, I think.
Yeah.
In the long term, I mean, this is like, you know, it's not good. It's a bad setback and a precedent that's going to lead people to not want computers then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be huge repercussions for anyone who had any sort of involvement with this.
Okay. But to go away from possible child pornography, we're going on to another TechCrunch story from you. What's
yeah, this story? More potential criminal behavior. So there's a new site, I'm sure you've heard of it, pleaserobme.com. It's basically a mashup of all people who tweet their Foursquare locations. They get put on the site, except that when they get put up on the site, it says at Paul Capistani or at Plan 8 has left home and checked in 4 days ago, basically suggesting that you're definitely not at home, you're somewhere else since you're checking in, and saying these are empty homes, so go rob them.
The thing is, they need to know where you live
first, though. Yeah, obviously. So, I mean, there were lots of reactionary, like, posts about how this is, like, it's, like, showing how people are being too open with what they're doing and that there's privacy concerns and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, you need to know a lot more in order to steal someone's or break into someone's home.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know where they live.
Well, yeah, I think the one thing with being open like that, I have actually started using Foursquare a lot. The thing is, if someone were to break into my house or my apartment, you know, whatever. I got nothing in there. I got a bed on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, this is similar to someone, like, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, saying, oh, because of, like, phones or cell phones, now, like, people will know if you're calling that you're not home or something, you know, like...
Government will track you, tinfoil hats.
Yeah.
Or this could just be a large, giant troll bait, I think.
Well, it definitely is. Yeah.
All right, so to go away from the possibility of break-ins and Beanie, we have a story from Wired Magazine about some lovely college kids. They made a car. They made a really nice car. At Cal Poly, they made a super, super, super good car that gets 2,752 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, this car out of Cal Poly was designed in a wind tunnel and is going to be used for the Eco Marathon as well, and was placed second place in the 2008 and 2009 Eco Marathons, as well as placing first in the 2007 Eco Marathon. The point is, this car was designed to beat records when it comes to miles per gallon. They say here in the article that the car weighs a total of... How many pounds was it?
96 pounds.
Yeah, 96 pounds.
That's insane.
Yeah. And it runs off of... It runs at a blistering 30 miles per hour with a modified 3-horse Honda 50cc 4-stroke engine. 3 horsepower.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is these kind of cars are never practical. It's you know...
Yeah, it's just pushing the technology to see how far it can go.
It's basically... This is the fact you have college students, undergrads, who are able to wind tunnel out a car, or, you know, a writing chassis, that can kick ass and take names when it comes to how much gas it can use.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you could cross with a 1 gallon of gas, you can cross the United States.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Cars. Love them. Yeah. Next story you got here from Boy Genius Report.
Yeah, so this story is about the class action suit that was filed against Google. If you had not heard, Google came out with a new product called Buzz.
And no, I did not hear about this. It's not like I check my Gmail all the time.
Yeah, I don't live in Gmail either, you know. But apparently, they forced upon the tens of millions of Gmail users this new thing called Buzz. And where they went wrong, where Google went wrong, was that it was an opt-out kind of system mm-hmm. where they would automatically, quote-unquote, friend you, have you following people. And all of this stuff was completely, like, visible by everyone. And so there were instances where, like, one woman had an ex-husband who had been abusive, and she was automatically following him, and he was following her. And obviously that's a situation you don't want. So there was a class action lawsuit filed against Google for this. In Google's defense, they responded very quickly to all the, like, hubbub of people's privacy concerns, and they turned it into opt-in and have started clarifying how the whole system works. But that's a pretty big mistake for a company the size and standing of Google.
Are you questioning my benevolent dictator?
They messed up for sure.
But Google, it's Google. They can do no wrong.
Yeah,
they're Google.
Do no evil. But according to this lawsuit, they were a little bit evil.
Jumped the gun.
Yeah.
Premature a little bit.
Yeah.
Never happened to me before kind of thing.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. But yeah, Google has no comment so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I still can't get into Buzz. I mean, I've tried using it a few times, but it's like yet another social network.
Yeah.
Yet, I mean, it's basically a complete ripoff of FriendFeed.
Yeah.
When you look at it. I mean,
a lot less functional than FriendFeed. FriendFeed actually had a ton of features.
Like the integration of all the other networks.
Yeah.
Like that was like, I currently use it to, I use FriendFeed to integrate the Twitter and my Facebook feed.
Mm-hmm.
To much of the behest upon you, as you always say. It's like, dude, you do so much spam on there. I'm like, dude, I don't have to do nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it can get a little bit overwhelming when you have, like, 18 different services all being cross-posted to, like, 32 services, you know, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Buzz is yet another, like, status update thingamajigger. Whoop-de-doo.
But it's the social web. Don't you know the social web marketing gurus have to be on there? Because it's all about the SEO. And eventually you have the two combine.
Yeah.
And they'll form some sort of weird homage of terrible.
Yes, yes. I mean, did you see, a little bit off topic, but did you see that your friends, like, postings started showing up in Google search results?
Yeah. They wanted that. That's about making money.
What do you mean? How is that about making money?
Well, your results, I think when you're logged in,
uh-huh.
it shows your friends' results as like if you keep them between your contacts.
Yeah.
And so that you can cross-reference your own results. But the thing is, basically, think about this. If a bunch of people start talking about product XYZ,
mm-hmm.
and product XYZ then becomes the top search for all the people on Google because that's an open forum topic thing that you have set up.
Mm-hmm.
Product XYZ then gets the first listing on Google's PageRank then, because it's all that, you know, PageRank juice that it gets because of all these people actually talking about it.
Yeah.
I would love to see how SEO people are going to try to hack this, because you know there's going to be, like, a run on the Gmail accounts now.
Oh, of course.
It's like, I can automate the buzz? No way!
Spam buzz bots. Oh,
God, don't even get me started on that kind of crap.
Yeah.
But to go away from yet another 140-character limit, got a story here from Boy Genius again, and it's about the Skype and Verizon merger, or not really merger, but exclusive agreement, as everyone's heard probably already, from the Mobile World Conference in Barcelona, Spain. Skype and Verizon announced that they're going to partner together, and Verizon is going to put Skype on all of their new smartphone and enhanced phones from now on, and not block any of the service if you have a data plan. But the one thing is that people are saying is that supposedly the 3G-enabled update for the iPhone version of Skype is being put on the back burner, particularly for, as some people say in the tinfoil hat, the government can listen to you world, that the... Let me get this quote right. That Skype is saying that there are concerns with AT&T's network. But on the GigaOM podcast from GigaOM, he said that it could actually be Verizon speak for Verizon saying, we want to keep Skype 3G only on our smartphones, and pressuring Skype to shelve the iPhone version. I don't think it's unheard of. It's a possible rumor. You know, back and to the left, back and to the left, you know, second gunman kind of thing, but, you know, possible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can definitely see Verizon and AT&T wanting to butt heads over this.
I think the one thing is, like, when we did the discussion panel about this, you weren't on the show for that one, but it was about cell phones.
Uh-huh.
And this is, I think, the only way you're going to see a movement on carriers in the future is the fact that the technologies are not going to allow backward support with old phone technologies. So the best way of doing it is just to take the data technology and do VoIP completely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is probably a test bed to see, you know, a VoIP standard that Verizon could use, like, an actual contact thing. Like, I was saying, like, you know, I could totally see Skype doing a thing where your Verizon account is actually your Skype login, much like how you could have multiple logins of different subdomain names on AOL Instant Messenger or MSN or even, you know, Yahoo Chat. And so, like, your username, then you could sign up for the service and you provided your minutes that way through Verizon's directly. And so it would be like a partnership kind of thing, because Skype would then have an entire larger customer base while having the infrastructure to handle it, because Verizon, you know, providing peering and all that other stuff with the large network base.
Uh-huh.
And I think, like, what would be interesting is I definitely want to see how this might play out in the next couple of years, particularly with Verizon's deployment of LTE. Sprint just announced that they're going to be having a WiMAX phone, an HTC WiMAX phone, in the next couple of months. And so, supposedly, they're going to be able to make phone calls over WiMAX. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Nice.
So, we got your story. Something about, I don't know, is this Lady Gaga? There's something about poker. I don't know this strange word. What is this?
Poker. Yeah, so in the world of domaining, poker.org was sold for $1 million, which ends up being the most ever for a .org domain. Pretty crazy that someone's willing to pay that much for a .org. I mean, I guess it's telling that most .coms are accounted for by now, you know. Actually, though, sex.com is back on the selling block as well.
Yeah, they say here in your article that you picked from TechCrunch is that sex.com was the largest .com sale at $14 million.
Yeah, but it seems to not... It seems like it's going to sell for much less. The starting bid is going to be $1 million this time around. So,
hey, you know what? It's a million I don't got.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's... You know that the people who are buying this in particular... Like, there's this one, like, it's pokercompany.com who bought this.
Really? Well, I'm guessing it's all for SEO juice, right? Like, they'll have a big poker domain name, and
it's not even like it's pokerstars.net or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's who's this coming? We're just going to go here and view and then probably get hit by 1,000 pop-ups. Wow, that's a really weird website. It's got a baby dressed up as, like, an old woman playing poker online.
That's a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's a sitter. It's a domain sitter. It looks like it's just basically a cheap, cheap website.
Yeah, squatting.
Yeah. Wow. I hope their money was well spent then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I find it funny that domain names are still going for this much money. And, like, now they can even, like, take domain names. Like, there was, like, you know, VerizonSucks.com and ComcastSucks.com.
Uh-huh.
There's, like, this whole big thing where they can sue now to have ownership of it because it's part of their trademark.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, that's some dumb, dumb stuff. Let's see what else we got here. One other story I want to bring up from a personal note, because I'm personally involved in it, is we just are pushing for the new service of Google Fiber. Google announced that they're doing a fiber project to bring fiber to communities, municipalities, and small government organizations in the United States. And if you wish to help support the deployment of Google's fiber in Baltimore, you can go to bemorefiber.com. It's bemorefiber. That's bemorefiber.com. And basically, we're asking you to just put your name there and a comment about what you think about getting fiber from Google here. Google is basically going to be spending probably about close to $1 billion to $2 billion and building out the fiber infrastructure of a local government or city. The reason why we get that number is that here in Baltimore, Verizon spent close to $10,000 per possible subscriber to put up what little Fios they have in the city. And right now, Baltimore is needing that infrastructure. We are the greatest little charming city next to the Bay.
Yeah.
That is not San Francisco Bay. And Google got to come out here. Show us some love. Follow them at @BeMoreFiber on Twitter. And again, www.bemorefiber.com. And say a word for us. What do you think about the whole Be More Fiber?
I mean, it would be amazing to have 2,000% faster internet speeds here. Like, right now, the fastest in the city, because Fios is out, like, in the county, sure, but it's not in the city as far as I know.
No, it is. It is for those who can pay close to $5,000 a month rent. There are all the new apartment buildings that they have in the city. They're paying to have the fiber put in those buildings.
Oh, okay.
So if you live right across from Camden Yards in the Zenith apartment complex,
makes sense.
You get the possibility of Fios. But the one thing though about particularly Verizon Fios is that when they do that, they're Verizon's lines. No one else can use them unless they're willing to pay an exorbitant fee, and they also take out the ability of ever using any other phone service but the, you know, fiber line, because they rip out your
copper lines. Sort of thing, yeah.
And because of the fact that it's a closed network, you're limited to just them. And that's the biggest thing with internet in Baltimore, is that you are stuck to either one devil, which is Comcast, or the other devil that is Verizon. And even for that, you have to have phone service. They will not give you naked DSL in the city unless you're willing to pay $60 a month.
Yeah.
What's funny is if you get a $9 phone line and then get DSL with it, you'll be charged $40 a month. Yeah. But if you just want the DSL...
I did the $9 phone line thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're put over a barrel in this city, and the average cost for internet, in order to get it cheap, you have to pay for phone and TV... And it's going to be coming to close to $100, $120 for just basic stuff. And with this service that Google would be providing, if they decide to come to the city, you'd be getting access to possibly 1 gigabit per second speed. That means with the current internet that you have in suburb areas, you could get 1080p video streaming over the internet, stuttering every few seconds, because you're getting 5 megabits per second.
Yeah.
A gigabit is 1,024 megabits per second. So you'd be able to get 5 1080p streams, all streaming at the same time, and no stuttering.
Yeah, this will be huge for video, that's for sure.
Well, it's like a video, access to offline storage. I mean, you can easily see this being partnered up with very cheap net-top boxes for people, or netbooks that are running Google Chrome, and all your apps are running on the cloud because...
iPad.
We don't talk about such things. Yes, we're talking about the Google, though. The Google juice. We got to talk about our benevolent dictator. It's basically one of the best things about this is that Google is a fighter for open access, which means that if the fiber is put down there, they're going to provide close to free access to anyone else that wants to use this to create other ISP services or do like IPTV, like they do in France and other European nations. Instead of having coaxial cable to do TV or a satellite dish, you have a box that's able to get a direct signal over the fiber that provides you multiple streams. And it provides you a la carte channel selection. You can have any channel you want, unlike Comcast, unlike Verizon, who still will not provide that a la carte service, no matter how much the federal government's saying you got to offer it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all these possibilities of mom and pop television networks coming out of the blue because now they have this access to this fiber speed. They can do whatever they want with it.
True. Now, you're all like kisses and roses with Google, but what about them actually becoming an ISP? I mean, they do search, they do advertising, they're doing phones, OSs, they're involved in everything now, right? They had the whole like Google Open or DNS system.
The Google DNS, I think actually the Google DNS was a testbed, particularly to see how they could do large infrastructure thing. Like they do like server stuff, which might have not as many internet users as, you know, the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the DNS, everyone uses DNS, and if they can provide a fast service for that, they start having people move over.
Yeah, but doesn't it look like at some point Google becomes the entire internet from...
But that's... At the same, I understand the
from
fear.
From search to...
I understand the fear. I understand the fear in that, but the thing is, they're building up the network, and the fact that they're building in that open access from the get-go, they're making it so that they make money by you going to their sites. They yes. don't make money by pissing people off.
Agreed.
And so whenever they do something that pisses people off, they're quick to change it. And I think one of the biggest things, they're basically pissed off that other companies who should be doing their job and innovating the nation are not. And so because they're not getting users who can get fast access to the internet, fast access to streaming video, online training services, you know, iTunes University, YouTube classes, all these things like that, they are not getting the kind of eyes and views that they think that they should be getting. And so they're basically saying, hey, you know what? We'll give you the spinal cord. We'll give you the nervous system. Have at it with what you will. We just want that infrastructure out there to help try to get it. I mean, the people that work at Google are PhD people. They're not like guy who was trained in his garage about how to do this stuff and just is doing it for, you know, fun to pay off bills as a side job. These are people who are dedicated to the research of this industry.
Yeah.
And so this is like the closest thing that you'll see to DARPA projects that are privately funded. And I know there are a lot of people who like the idea of privately funded organizations and large projects like this. I'm not going to say anything about how I know people like this. I'm not going to talk about any politics about that, but I'm just saying there's some people who like the idea of private, you know, organizations doing this. I mean, it's the same thing as Google wants to go to the moon.
Yeah, no, and they did fund the XPRIZE, right?
Exactly. Like, I mean, if you're going to have infrastructure build out in America, people don't want to pay taxes. That's just a given. They don't want to ever pay taxes, and that's a sad thing, a state of affairs in America, is they don't want to pay taxes for services billed out like this.
Yeah.
So the only way you're going to have this is someone else who's saying, you know what, I'll do it, and I will allow anyone access to it because it'll allow competition, it'll allow build out, it'll allow an infrastructure that we should have for the year 3000 and not 1980.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much what we have in Baltimore right now, is 1990 at best for our telecom infrastructure.
Yeah.
But to go away from that, this is our close-up for the episode. The reason why we had Paul on today in particular is Paul is partnering up with me to cover a great little festival and...
small little...
itty-bitty-tiny thing. In a little city in Texas called South by Southwest. And South by Southwest is, what has it been there? Like, it's been there for 10 years?
Oof. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be my first time there, yeah. So...
Well, it's going to be both our first time there. We're both there as press. We're going to have camera people there. We're going to have runners and gophers and that whole thing. And we're going to be doing daily footage uploading and posting to the YouTube page. And right now, we are looking for sponsors. If you are a fan of the show and know anyone that wants to provide any sponsorship, please contact us at podcast, that's PODCAST, at plan8ts.com. Again, that's PLAN, the number 8ts.com. So it's podcast at planets.com. We are looking for sponsors who want to provide any funding to help us cover the costs. It is expensive to do this show and go to these events, and we want to bring more of it to you. So, Paul, we're closing out today. Where can we find more of your work?
My work can be found by Googling me. I've got a website, paulcapistani.com, and, of course, my startup, ipicky.com.
Okay.
And I'm on Twitter, paul/paulcapistani.
Okay. This has been the Planet Podcast, episode 19 for This Week in Tech News. I'm your host, Patrick Roanhaus, as always. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Engage.